from 30 for 30 Podcasts.
Brian Patta, senior defensive lineman from Miami, gunned down.
The key to this case, it's Brian.
An hour before he died, he was on the phone arguing with somebody.
This might be a hit.
You want the truth. They just want a conviction.
Being placed under arrest.
We had a killer amongst us.
Murder at the U. Listen now.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Hey, everybody.
Can't get enough of the Rich Eisen Show? You're in luck. You can find us everywhere. Watch us weekdays on Disney Plus from noon to 3 Eastern. Miss the show? We've got a podcast so you can listen anytime. But here's the best part. Our YouTube channel. Subscribe at youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show and you'll never miss a moment. Now, on with the show.
And now, here comes Soler.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
They're going to start the fight. They're throwing blows.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
We got major differences here.
Earlier on the show, longtime golf writer Alan Shipnuck. Basketball Hall of Famer Chris Webber. Coming up, senior writer for Sports Illustrated, Albert Breer. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour three of the program. Had a fun first 2 hours. Alan Shipnuck from Augusta, Georgia, on the Masters in his new book, Rory, which I've got right here in my hand. And look who's on the cover. Unbelievable. It's Rory. go figure. I don't know why I did that. Chris Webber, we just hung with C-Web. And let's bring in a man who no doubt is very excited about the Big Ten dominance that we've seen in the sports world.
I'm sure he's thrilled.
He has to be.
Albert Breer, back here from Sports Illustrated.
Congratulations,
right, Albert?
Rich.
Right?
Congratulations.
We're all Big Ten guys, right? We're Big Ten guys.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that maybe it means more to us now. So
that's it. I said the same. See,
again. So the phrase that you, Jamokes, made fun of one conference.
You didn't make fun of. We were offended by it. We were offended by it. We didn't make fun of it.
Now you've co-opted it?
That's
how it's
because
working?
It's called irony, Chris.
Wow.
Look
it
up.
If it means more to them, maybe they can start spending with us,
right? Yeah, there you go. Look at us.
Guys.
Yes.
Yeah. You guys.
Sad state of affairs.
It's disgusting.
Or it's the state of affairs,
Chris,
and you're sad.
Chris, it's amazing what happens when all the spending is out in the open and not against the rules anymore, isn't it? Kind of crazy the way
it
that
just
works.
Means above the table.
Just like gambling, college sports was better when it was all back alleys and behind closed doors.
Yep. This guy.
I agree.
How are you, Albert? Good to see you.
I'm good.
Parisian tan. I like seeing it. Good to see it. Congrats
getting some time off. We had a great time over there. I would recommend, honestly, I got warned to not bring my kids to France, and I am so glad I did it. They had an awesome time, and what a great experience it was for everybody.
Brother,
so,
I'm so glad you got some much-needed PTO, man. You work both ends of the candle all the time, and appreciate you taking our call here, top of hour three of this week. What's the story of the draft right now? What's the story of it?
I think, it's... I mean, I would say once you get past Fernando Mendoza, it's kind of how these guys are going to come off the board. And I think the most interesting things is that you don't really have the prototypes, right? Like, so in other words, you don't have the Myles Garrett defensive end. You don't have the Patrick Surtain corner, Jalen Ramsey corner. You don't have the Joe Alt left tackle. You don't have the Julio Jones or AJ Green or Calvin Johnson receiver, which I think it's not great for you if you're picking in the top 10 as one of those teams, but I think it actually is going to make for a more dramatic, less predictable first night of the draft, because you're going to be looking at it, you're going to say, okay, at the premium positions, right? You know, are you going to compromise a little bit on David Bailey, who's not as good against the run, or Arvell Reese, who you have to have a plan for him, right? The great tackles in this year's draft are right tackles, not left tackles. The receivers are good, and there's depth there, but it's not great at the top. You kind of juxtapose that against maybe the best players in the draft are at non-premium positions. So that's Jeremiah Love, the Notre Dame running back, Sonny Styles, the Ohio State linebacker, Caleb Downs, the Ohio State safety. And so, you know, to me, like, that's the most interesting thing is how I do think there's a little less certainty within the top 10 and more guys who could jump in or fall out of the top 10 as a result of all of this.
Let me dovetail on that with a take that might be hot, Albert, which, mm-hmm. you know, is not usually my lane, but you're like, we don't have prototypes in this draft.
Yeah.
And you could start with Fernando Mendoza's not like the Joe Burrow of quarterbacks first overall either. Mm-hmm. And Kirk Cousins being signed in Vegas to not hedge, but to provide the Raiders with the room to potentially mm-hmm. groom and sit is a signal that's the case at the top of this draft. He's the avatar of not the prototype, but a really good player with a high ceiling. That could be the draft, the 2026 draft. A lot of great players with some high ceilings, right?
Yeah. Is that what you're saying? I mean, I would say, like, for sure, in that, like, we could be talking about Arvell Reese winding up being like Micah Parsons. You just, again, you have to have a plan for it because he doesn't like really fit in the box of what you'd be looking for a pass rusher you take that high, but neither did Parsons, you know, when he came out 5 years ago. You know, I think that ceiling exists with, again, the guys at the non-premium positions. Like Jeremiah Love is an exciting dynamite player. You know, Sonny Styles, Caleb Downs, same thing. Really good football players, high football IQ, all of that. And, you know, it's interesting. I've juxtaposed this like with like, all right, if you look at like the totality of the decisions these teams are going to make, right? I look at the Lions 2023 draft, and you remember, because you were sitting on that stage, they got crushed for taking a running back, Jahmyr Gibbs, and a linebacker, Jack Campbell, at 12 and 18 with their two first-round picks. And it was on the premise that these are just the best players. And Jahmyr Gibbs speaks for himself what that's become, right? Like, as like a do-everything running back. And then, you know, Jack Campbell was first team all pro this year. And then in the second round, they wind up with Sam Laporta, a tight end, and Brian Branch, like a corner safety hybrid. And those guys are really good players too. And I think that's sort of the decision making for the teams up top now is, do we just go with a really good player where we know what he's going to be? And maybe he doesn't play again one of those premium positions, but at least we have an idea that this guy can be a difference maker for us. Or do we roll the dice on the ceiling on some of the other guys? And, you know, so again, that's a guy like a Reese, you know, a Francis Maui Noah, the tackle from Miami. You know, most people think he's strictly a right tackle, but maybe he can be a really top end right tackle, you know. So I think in those circumstances, you know, you're looking at it and you're taking like the guys at the non-premium positions where you have a really good idea of what those guys are versus the guys at the premium positions where, you know, you're projecting a little bit more.
15 days removed from the draft, Albert. Ty Simpson, does he have a restful sleep Thursday to Friday or staring at the ceiling wondering what happened? What do you think?
I would lean towards the latter right now.
Okay.
I can't place him in the first round. And here's the thing. Like, I think the fascinating thing about him versus Mendoza is that you talk to enough people and they'll say, like, when you look at Simpson's tape, you'll see a lot of things that translate directly to the NFL that you don't see on Mendoza's tape. So what does that mean? Well, you know, with Mendoza, you know, at least the Indiana tape, the Cal tape's a little different, but the Indiana tape, what the people will tell you is you'll see like a lot of RPOs, and because he has these great receivers around him, a lot of times things go according to plan. So you don't see him having to, you know, go through progressions and see the whole field. And doesn't mean he can't do it. You just don't see it as much because he's throwing to Omar Cooper, who's probably going to be a first round pick, Elijah Surratt, who might be somewhere in the top 100, and then Charlie Becker, who's was a sophomore last year and will be back at Indiana, three NFL receivers. So like, if you're talking about like what they've already put on tape, you may actually see a little bit more just projecting him to the NFL from Simpson than you do from Mendoza. But that's not the job of the scout. The scout's job is not to like look back at the last year and say, oh, well, who's accomplished more now? It's to project where those guys are going forward. And Fernando Mendoza is 6'5", 236 pounds, has a bigger arm, has more starts, which is a really important thing. The comp I hear for Mendoza is Goff, where the comp I hear for Simpson is Brock Purdy. And then the question becomes, are you comfortable taking somebody with a Brock Purdy profile in the first round? And a lot of teams aren't, you know? And so I think like it's interesting because, you know, I would say like the Steelers are a team that some people have said like, oh, well, maybe they would do it. I don't think that's going to happen. And I think part of that is they sort of made that decision, you know, that sort of decision to gamble on somebody who had like didn't quite have the same physical traits as you'd normally see the first round quarterback in Kenny Pickett 4 years ago. And it didn't work out, you know, so my guess would be Ty Simpson for those reasons probably goes somewhere in the second round because I don't think people look at him and say, yeah, that guy projects to be one of the top 10 quarterbacks in football. Now, if you're comfortable taking a guy who might be somewhere closer, like maybe like, you know, he gets into the top 15 at some point, you know, then we'd be having a different discussion. But I think most people, when they're drafting one in the first round, say, I want to have a guy who's has a shot to get in the top 10 someday. And I think Mendoza's got a better shot at that based on his physical ability than Simpson does.
So then let me follow up with a question I asked Todd McShay of The Ringer on Monday, and I'll ask of you now and everyone else from now until the draft that appears on this program. How much does 2027 loom over this draft?
I wish I had the names in front of me. I could pull them up. There are, I think, 12 of them, 11 or 12 of them.
Wow.
Who have a shot to go in the first round. Now, here's the difference. I want to make sure that I couch this the right way. Because going into, like, at this point, 3 years ago, right, when we were going into 2024, okay, so it was the spring of 23. At that point, we already knew Caleb Williams was probably a top five pick. We already knew that Drake May was a top five pick. And then you had other guys like, you know, again, you know the names, Jaden Daniels, Michael Penix, J.J. McCarthy, and Bo Nix play their way into that range. I think the difference is I don't know if there's anybody that's a lock, stock, and barrel sure thing the way that Caleb and Drake were going into the 23 season. With the 27 guys now, but there are so many of them. You know what I mean? Like, and again, you can just start to rattle them off. And, you know, Dante Moore is obviously the most accomplished of these guys and probably is the closest thing to a lock. Arch Manning, CJ Carr, Julian Sand, Nico Iamaliava, Brendan Sorsby. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on and on. And, you know, I mean, for that reason, it's like, okay, like, well, all 12 aren't going to hit. There aren't going to be 12 first-round quarterbacks.
Right.
But when you have a bigger number that you're working with, there's a better chance that four or five of them are going to hit. And so I think that's sort of where we are with that. There's just a ton of names. And, you know, how that plays out, you know, we'll see in the fall. But, you know, I think there are plenty of teams that are looking at it and saying, in 27, there are going to be more options for us. So who are those teams? I'd say the Dolphins are kicking the can down the road till next year. We'll see what happens when Malik Willis, maybe he really hits. If he doesn't, they'll be in position to draft one. The Browns, the Cardinals, the Jets. Like, there are just a big number of teams that are looking at it now and saying, we're okay keeping our powder dry and looking towards 2027 based on what else is out there on the horizon. And by the way, in 27, you also have the prototypes at other positions. You know, Jeremiah Smith, the Ohio State receiver, you know, Leonard Moore, the Notre Dame corner, Colin Simmons and at Texas, and Dylan Stewart at South Carolina as your, you know, prototype edge rushers. So even if there isn't a great quarterback at the top of that draft, if you are picking high in next year's draft, you might have a shot at one of those guys as well. So there are a lot of teams that are already looking towards 27. And I think that does affect your decision-making at some point to some degree at the quarterback position.
A few minutes left here with Albert Breer of Sports Illustrated. Wondering if there's any on a couple of things.
Yep.
First of all, formality for C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson to get fifth-year options picked up. But it's a time where somebody who drafted second overall, wins Offensive Rookie of the Year, makes the playoffs three straight years, and wins a playoff game in all three straight years, that guy and someone like Stroud would be on target for an extension now.
Yeah.
How is that happening, or are the Texans willing to play this thing out to see a little more from Stroud?
Yeah, I think they explored after the draft. I don't know, like, and the thing that's difficult about this is, like, how many escape hatches are the Texans going to give themselves? Are they going to explore it looking for a deal, like looking for a discount because he didn't play well at the end of the year? That's the question. It's so different than the Will Anderson conversation, you know, which I think does complicate this to some degree, because Will Anderson, it's like, you know, like, let's just hope it doesn't hurt too bad when we have to, when we have to write that first check, you know, like I mean, Will Anderson can ask for $50 million now, I think, you know, and I think that there's a chance that he gets there and becomes the first non-quarterback to have that five in front of the average per year, you know. With Stroud, it's more complicated. And when Stroud sees Will Anderson get whatever he's going to get, you know, then, you know, like, does that, you know, like, become the floor when you look at the structure of the guarantees? Obviously the numbers are bigger at quarterback, but, you know, like, it could complicate it a little bit. So, my guess would be Bryce Young plays into the, you know, fourth year of his contract and is playing for a contract this fall. CJ, I think that feels to me like that's the likelihood that happens. You know, but we'll see. The other thing is, like, the numbers have escalated to a point now, Rich, where, I mean, look, like, Dak Prescott signed at 60, and that was, let me do the math in my head, was 17 months ago, 18 months ago, something like, no, 19 months ago. So you account for all of that inflation, right? $60 million 19 months ago, a quarterback, I think next year you're going to be talking about Drake May and Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels potentially getting 70.
Well, that's wild. But I mean, the contracts that I think that loom here are the ones for Tua and Kyler. You know, you got two teams that went ahead and gave second contracts to guys who are now playing for league minimums elsewhere. And you are taking big fat cap hits.
Yep.
You know, and
so you better be damn sure.
Brockman's looking for a franchise that's going to tell somebody with Stroud's resume and even results that are not in the championship realm, but are in the pretty damn good realm with, you know, an upside realm. He's looking for the first franchise to just let that guy walk and go back into the rookie pool and start again. You know, sort of the way that the Chiefs handle their cornerbacks. You know what I mean?
You know what's so interesting about that? What's so interesting about that to me is, like, you look at what Seattle is paying Darnold and what Tampa is paying Baker. It's half. You know what I mean? Like, it's even Daniel Jones, who, like, everybody's like, whoa, like, look at that. Like, an $88 million deal over 2 years. Like, that's still less than 75% the top of the market, you know? Mm-hmm. So, like, I think for some of these teams, you look at it and you say, because I think, like, the reason why that whole idea that you draft one high and then he plays for 3 years and then you extend him at the top of the market, which has happened over and over and over and over again. Like, if you draft one high in the first round, it's almost like you're required to pay him at the top of the market. And I think, you know, part of that is, like, the fear, okay, like, what's behind door number two if we don't do this? And now you see other teams finding solutions through the reclamation projects. Does that change the dynamic if you're Houston saying, well, like, let's give this another year. And if we've got to pay a little bit of a premium because he killed it, well, that's a good problem to have. And if he doesn't, well, like, is there going to be our version of Baker Mayfield out there for us for half of the price? You know, again, like, Baker got signed at $33 million per year in an environment where Dak's getting 60. I mean, would you rather have Baker at 33 or Tua at 55? I mean, that's not even a question anymore, you know? So you're right. Like, and I think that teams are going to look at this a little bit differently now because that idea of the reclamation project is at least out there, where if you're not totally sure on your quarterback, it's not like, I mean, again, it's not like there's doom and gloom behind door number two. We've seen teams, you know, come out of these situations where it didn't work with a quarterback and, you know, and for one reason or another, and then they were able to go out in the veteran market and find a solution.
And the other one I wanted to ask you about, is there any there is, why is Myles Garrett not in Cleveland with Todd Monken opening up for business?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think like the optics of it aren't great for Monken, but like I try to remind people this time of year, like what they're actually doing, which is lifting and meeting. You know, if the quarterback's not there, that can be an issue because beyond just the symbolism of it, like you want your quarterback in house because how he plays is going to affect so many other people in the building, you know, and not just in the way that a quarterback helps you win games. Like it's legitimately going to affect the other 10 guys in the offensive huddle's ability to do their jobs. The first 2 weeks of the offseason program, again, they're lifting and meeting. If he's not there until the mandatory mini camp in June, I think we're talking about something else. And I, by the way, am on the record with having said that the Browns should explore trading Myles Garrett. But you know, like I wouldn't sound the alarm quite yet. Like Myles has always sort of marched to the beat of his own drummer. And I just have a hard time crushing a guy. I don't think it's ideal.
Oh, I'm like, not crushing him. He has every right at this part of his career to say meetings, lifting, whatever. But the only reason why I'm connecting the dots here, or asking the question is the dot connection of the moving around of a bonus towards the end of the summer. And, you know, Andrew Berry did say at the owner's meeting, that's just don't pay attention to that. It's just moving stuff around. Right. There's nothing there. Right. He's a career Brown. Yeah. And at the same time, they're also trying to institute a rule where, you know, you can get up to 5 first round draft picks in a trade. So, and everyone's looking at that to say that the Browns wanted to, you know, end up trading away their draft picks for somebody as opposed to, well, we could trade somebody away who could actually get close to that. We have that guy. So why not institute this rule where we can maximize our results? You know, I mean, there just seems to be a little bit too many things out there. I mean, there are two pushpins on the wall. I don't know if I'm not that guy like Charlie Day, you know, attaching it all with red string here.
Yeah.
But,
here's the beauty of it. Because of all the things you said, they don't have to shop them. If someone's interested, they're going to call.
Right.
Why not? Right. Like, why not pick up the phone and call based on all the things that you just laid out? Do you want me to explain why I think they should trade him?
Yes.
I think they should trade him because I don't think the timelines match up anymore. Ooh. If you look at it and you say, like, there's a good chance that the quarterback of the future isn't going to be on the roster until 2027, right? Like, so let's just say that that's the case. And you look at, like, what they did last year in trading the Travis Hunter pick, which was, I think, basically an acknowledgement that the core that they had built around and guys, you know, like that are gone now, like Wyatt Teller and Joel Bitonio that were there forever, Nick Chubb, you know, and then you still have a couple of those guys left and Ward and Garrett. It was an acknowledgement that group had aged out. So we need more young talent across our roster. One guy isn't going to do it. So they trade down and they wind up like really putting together a nice draft class with Mason Graham, with the defensive rookie of the year, Carson Schlesinger, with Harold Fannin, with Quinshon Judkins, with Dylan Sampson. Really good group. They take a couple quarterbacks. We'll see what happens with Shador in the fall. And now they have 2 first round picks again. And so everything's building now towards potentially taking a quarterback in 27 and maybe having a really nice group of young players around him. So, like, let's just say you have a rookie quarterback there in 27, and you say, when we're really going to hit it with this group, when it's really going to come together with this group, with the 25 rookies, the 26 rookies, and then your quarterback in 27 is in 28. At that point, Myles Garrett is 32 years old and going to turn 33 during the season. And so the timelines to me don't match up. So would you rather have Myles Garrett there chasing a championship at the end of his career? Maybe he's not the same as he was. Or would you take 3 first round picks for him right now to supercharge everything that I was just talking about? You know what I mean? Yep. Like, I don't know. I mean, I look at it like, I mean, you could really be cooking with gas if you were the Browns with, you know, a bunch more first round picks now. And yes, you have to hit on the picks. And I hate giving away a great player. Myles Garrett's going to the Hall of Fame. But I just don't know that the team's timeline matches up with his timeline anymore.
Certainly if Will Anderson, you just said, could be the first $50 million a year non-quarterback, and if he's that, then why wouldn't Garrett say, hello? You know what I mean? Like, so you're going to have to readjust his contract too. And in all honesty, just as to be respectful of Myles Garrett, name me another non-quarterback that you could say you get three first-round picks for and nobody laughs at you.
And right. I mean,
there's not another one in the NFL.
Right. And at his age, too. And at 30 years old.
And there was no hint of irony or tongue-in-cheek in what you had to say there. I mean, that is that's a fact. Albert, thanks for the time, brother. You got it.
You got it.
Thanks.
And congrats again. I hope you. I know you're having a great week. I hope it continues for you. Enjoy it well.
I don't know how it can get much better. Thanks again.
Just means more.
Thank you. That's it. It does mean more to me. That's true.
Good for you guys.
Thank you.
It's great.
There you go. Albert Breer out the door, everybody. All right. That was great stuff. He gave me one thing, food for thought. I want to hit on that when we come back. Also, my power rankings of the greatest sports moments of my life. One of them just happened this week.
My life.
The Rich Eisen Show Podcast.
Need parts fast? O'Reilly Auto Parts has fast. Need them now? We've got now. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. We're O'Reilly Fast. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In a world in need of a hero, one man rises to the challenge in style. He is just driving the kids to soccer practice. Make every day feel epic in an all-new Hyundai Palisade Hybrid with up to an EPA-estimated 619 miles of range on select trims, advanced tech, and class-leading interior space. Because when you're hauling kids' gear, snacks, and backpacks, space matters. And so does comfort. Just make sure they keep their cleats off the seats. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for details.
Rich Eisen here. I've traveled all over for some of the biggest NFL moments you can imagine. Conference championships, Super Bowls, draft weekends, and everywhere I go, the city just feels different. It's buzzing, packed, electric. Now, take that energy and multiply it by the entire world. That's what's coming this summer with the FIFA World Cup. Fans from every corner of the globe are going to be traveling to experience it live. And when that many people come to town, they're all looking for a place to stay. And that got me thinking. If you live in or near a host city, this is one of those rare moments. You already have a space. This summer, you could list your space on Airbnb while fans are in town for the FIFA World Cup. Not as a full-time thing. Not as some huge lifestyle change. Just during an event when demand is naturally high. When I travel for big games, I just want a comfortable place in a real neighborhood. And that's exactly what so many visiting fans will be looking for. If you've ever thought about listing your space, this summer is a great time as we welcome FIFA World Cup fans. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, let's take a couple phone calls here. Jeffrey in San Francisco. What's up, Jeffrey? Hold on for a while.
Hey, Rich Eisen. How you doing, dude?
What's going on, man?
Hey, listen, I got to be serious with you for 1 second. Okay. I hate being serious, but you know, sometimes.
All right. Go for it.
Is this Lance Storm?
Listen, I enjoyed that interview with the author of the Rory book.
Yes, you're talking about Alan Shipnuck, yep, the golf
author. Yes, sir. Uh-huh. So in my former life, you know, I used to be a pharmacist. And clinical pharmacist. I get irritated when I hear, you know, addiction stuff that's not quite where it should be. Okay. What I'm thinking, when I heard Alan use that phrase, he gets himself into these situations. That's not how addiction works, you know. And I'm saying we need to be a little more sensitive. But when I see those T-shirts in Augusta, those Tiger T-shirts, that really irritates me.
Listen, you know, and Jeffrey, I understand where you know. Not being experts on addiction and you know, opioids is a serious business. And I understand there's different types of addictions and different ways that people can react to it. And, you know.
There you go, Rich. Yes.
I appreciate it. I understand that, and you know, I appreciate the call too, Jeffrey, because it is it's such a difficult subject matter with Tiger. Yeah. You know, he has gone to apparently go address it, and I hope he does, because you know, he's fortunate to be able to address it and then come out and not be in jail, because he has not taken somebody else out with him.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Lucky about that. Let's go to Magic in Champaign, Illinois, back here on the program. Magic, appreciate you calling back. What's going on?
Hey, what's going on, R.E.? How you doing, man?
R.E. as well. How are you, Magic?
That's a first.
Look at us. Yeah. Look at us, right? Look at us. Look at us.
I'm doing good. I'm doing great, man. After
Champions.
Monday night.
Champions.
We're doing great.
Leaders and best. Hail to us. Yep. Right there in Champaign, Illinois. Right there in the home of the Fighting Illini. Are you talking? You just keeping on the download, but are you saying it with your chest amongst folks there in Champaign?
And I'm glad you said that, home of Champaign and Fighting Illini, because mm-hmm. I just had lunch at this barbecue place and ran into the Illinois assistant coach.
Okay.
One of the Illinois assistant coaches, so mm-hmm. Kevin Kruger.
Okay.
Lon Kruger's son. Uh-huh. Lon Kruger's son, yep. Kevin Kruger. So I got on my Michigan gear, got on my Michigan fat, you know, million-dollar chain. Mm-hmm. Coming in the restaurant, I say, Kevin, what's up, man? I know Kevin from back in the day when his father was coaching here, and he was playing basketball for Centennial High School. So him and his lovely wife are there. We're sitting down, and I'm just talking to them, and we're having a long conversation about basketball life and coaching and everything like that. So isn't it ironic? I run into a...
It's like rain on your wedding day.
Champagne.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah. I just went Alanis Morissette with Magic in Champaign, Illinois. Thank you very much, Magic. Right. There you go, Magic.
But hey, yeah. R.E., listen.
Yeah.
Monday, great crowd. I mean, it was 70,000 people there. 65,000 was us amazing blue fans mm-hmm. there. So a great showing, a great picture. Game, great atmosphere. I mean, it was just a great time Monday night, man.
Well,
I wish you could have been there.
Me too, Magic. I appreciate that. Thank you for the call. And it was much more geographically sound to be in Indianapolis if you're coming from the environs in the Midwest than obviously Storrs, Connecticut.
Yep.
I've got a power rankings, everybody.
Let's do it.
Based off of what just happened Monday night. Power rankings of the greatest sports moments of my life. I hope you're interested because it's presented by SoFi. Hit it.
This is mine.
Power rankings.
There are many like it, but this one is mine.
Power rankings.
All right, you're gonna notice a theme here. I'll just say right in front, there's no Jets moments here.
Oh,
yeah, please.
Come on, Rich.
Not when you've got these other ones. I couldn't find a place for one. Just simply could not. Number 10 on the list is the moment on November 23rd, 1991. I'm out of college by about a year now, and I'm sitting at home. It's Michigan versus Ohio State, and Desmond Howard runs a 93-yard punt return to the house and strikes the famed Heisman pose.
That's number 10?
Number 10 on the list. Famed Heisman pose as Michigan beat the Ohio State about the face, head, chest, and neck area. 31-3 being the final score. Desmond Howard's Heisman pose was just outstanding.
That seems low.
Listen to the list.
All right.
Number 9 on the list is the only Knickerbocker moment on it. And out of all of them, I chose this one because I'll never forget this. As a 15-year-old kid, on January 31st, 1984, Bernard King shot 20 of 30 from the field, 10 of 10 from the free throw line, and scoring 50 against the Dallas Mavericks. And then the next night goes to Dallas and scores 50 points again.
Ooh.
Bernard King's back-to-back 50-point games, first time it had been pulled off since Wilt Chamberlain did it in 1964. And I looked it up. Bernard took 0 3-point shots. They were all twos. Bernard in this 83-84 season only took 4 3-point shots, and he missed them all. That wasn't his game.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that.
Wow.
That's when I was beginning to love the Knicks and seeing what the Knicks could be like with Bernard King. That's number 9 on the list for me. Number 8 on the list,
This is a big professional moment for me. Game four of the 2001 World Series, Diamondbacks Yankees. The Diamondbacks score two in the top of the eighth to take a 3-1 lead, and the entire media trying to get ready to go out on the field to do interviews after the game. There was only two tunnels in the old Yankee Stadium. You could choose the tunnel of the visiting dugout or the home dugout. What we had to do was choose the visiting or home tunnel based on who was going to win the game, because the other tunnel would be used by who was losing it to get back to their clubhouses. So as soon as the bottom of the ninth hit, we were in the tunnel of the Arizona Diamondbacks, because the Yankee tunnel needed to be clear for them to have a walk-off loss and go back to their clubhouse. But Tino Martinez hit a two-run shot off of Byung-Hyun Kim, and then that was the way that we were then running back to the Yankee tunnel after staying put in the top of the 10th inning for the Arizona Diamondbacks tunnel. We were running back and forth tunnel to tunnel to get ready to run out on the field whoever could walk it off. And it was like the Benny Hill Show, if you remember that. Where it was running with me with a microphone and someone with a camera and someone with a boom mic and a cop and a firefighter and first responders just going back and forth. And I'm lined up bottom of the 10th inning, and all I could see was this small television set in some little room off of the Yankee tunnel. And I saw what I thought was a home run, and I heard a rumbling and somebody screaming, run, 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 go on out. It's over. Derek Jeter just hit a home run, and I get pushed out on a Yankee Stadium field, and I looked up and I saw this. I'm getting goosebumps. I saw Jeter pumping his fist, and I saw him rounding third, and I looked up at the cheap seats that I grew up in and saw people going nuts, and he became the first ever Mr. November, and I was on the field.
That's cool.
That's number eight. Number seven on the list was the 1997 Michigan Wolverines team that won it all but only got half because somebody in the, the coach's side of things wanted to give Tom Osborne a gold watch in retiring. I think we would have beaten the crap out of that Nebraska team that year, but that's something that will never, ever get decided. Hall of Famers galore on that Michigan team, including a backup quarterback named Tom Brady. But I'll never forget that. Michigan winning a national championship in football, but it got a little bit taken away because it was only the Associated Press that said we were the champs. The coaches said Nebraska was the champs. That'll be an argument forever. Number six on this list of the best sporting moments of my life was October 26th, 1996, when the Yankees won their first World Series since 1978. The 1996 World Series, the Yankees did not have the better team. Well, they had the better team. They might not have had a better roster against that Braves team that had that incredible pitching lineup. The Yankees beat Greg Maddux in Game 6. After going down 0-2, they won four in a row, including all three in Fulton County, and then this one in Yankee Stadium that night. I was sitting there at my desk at SportsCenter, wishing I was there. Couldn't be there. Had to do SportsCenter.
I remember that.
Small violin right there. But 1996 World Series Yankees winning. Here's my top five greatest sports moments of my life. Number five is what just happened.
Woo! Number five.
Number five is what just happened. The 2026 Michigan Wolverine tournament run. I think they're the best Michigan basketball team I've ever seen. But that's number five on the list. Number four on the list is my top baseball moment. Not the 86 Mets.
86 Mets?
86 Mets.
No, my top baseball moment. I understand all this Yankee stuff is bothering you, but too bad.
I don't dislike
04, right? 04?
Your fan.
No. 04. No. It was the night Reggie had three home runs.
Oh, that's a good one. How is that not number one?
I was eight years old.
I know it.
Reginald Martinez Jackson.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
My guy. Number three on the list is the 89 Wolverines cutting down the nets because I was in school.
Oh, yeah.
I was in school. I was in campus. As you know, closing the Michigan Daily newspaper.
Yeah. That's good.
I was a student on campus.
Did you and Ramil have any classes together?
We did not, sir. Run into each other in the halls of academia.
Fantastic team.
Good one.
So good.
Number two on the list is Team 144, the Michigan Wolverines, winning the national championship just a couple of years ago. Ooh. As an undefeated team. Also, just me taking it in the chops and the shorts for all those years sitting on this set, on the show, the fact that I could be here with you guys in front of this microphone, and seeing Jim Harbaugh, the quarterback, my first quarterback when I was a freshman at Michigan, do what he did and win in football and be undefeated. That's my second greatest sports moment of my life. Number one on my power rankings, the greatest sports moment of my life is, in fact, from 2016 when I ran a 5.94 40-yard dash in the street. This could be the pinnacle, guys. This could be, but you never know.
Okay, right? That's good.
You never know.
That's good.
It's my own physical achievement.
It's good.
5.94 40-yard dash in a suit at the NFL Scouting Combine. And good. Mark, I will try to beat this Saturday when I do my charity run at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital in Memphis, Tennessee. I'm going to that remarkable place on planet Earth, on Memphis, to run my 40 on campus there at the hospital, and we'll show you the results of that. Maybe I'll have a new number one.
Ooh!
And that's my greatest sports moment of my life, presented by SoFi. Get your money right.
Okay.
Little old Henry-like twist.
I can't believe you put 89 in front of this pet. This
I was on campus, Mike.
I know. I get it. But it's like this.
Mike, I was a 20-year-old on campus.
I get it.
Wilding out.
Yeah. You did the 98 Yankees you didn't put anywhere?
It was great. It was great. But at that point in time, you know.
We already had a couple.
You know what I mean? The first one, I hadn't seen one since 1978. I hadn't seen one since I was nine.
I get it.
Remember that team in 96? It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I had a great night that night. I'll tell you about it later.
Let's take a break. We're back here on the Rich Eisen Show in just a moment.
The Rich Eisen Show, the podcast.
Rich Eisen here. The April 15th tax deadline is coming fast, but don't worry. Hand off your taxes to a TurboTax expert today. You know how April feels. Everything speeds up. Games matter more. Hoops and hockey schedules tighten. Your phone won't stop buzzing. And somewhere in the middle of it all, there's that quiet little reminder. Taxes. You'll get to it tonight or tomorrow or after the weekend. And if you handle it the old way, you're refreshing your inbox like it's breaking news. Waiting, wondering, hoping everything's squared away. That's a lot of mental bandwidth. With Intuit TurboTax Expert Full Service, you can match with a dedicated expert who understands your specific tax situation and handles your taxes for you, start to finish. You can do it all online or meet in person at one of their new tech-enabled store locations. Have your tax forms imported directly into the app and hand everything off to your TurboTax expert. While they work to get you every dollar you deserve, you can go about your normal routine, giving you time back to focus on what actually deserves your attention, like rooting for your team to make the playoffs. April 15th is not waiting, people. Visit TurboTax.com and hand off your taxes to a TurboTax expert today.
Quick time out. Some breakfast intel you want to know about. Kodiak Frozen Power Waffles and Flapjacks are built for busy mornings. Heat it, eat it, and you're out the door. No long prep, no complicated game plan. They're packed with 12 to 14 grams of protein per serving, a good source of fiber, and crafted with 100% whole grains, not refined white flour. So you're getting something that actually fuels you. And there's depth on the roster. Buttermilk and vanilla, blueberry, chocolate chip, even gluten-free options. Breakfast that delivers. Snack that delivers. Find Kodiak Frozen Waffles and Flapjacks in the frozen aisle at your local grocery store. They're the ones with the bear on the box.
Back on the Rich Eisen Show, radio and TV. For small businesses, every hire counts, and so does your time. Hiring can quickly become overwhelming, from sorting applications to figuring out who's truly qualified. That's where LinkedIn Hiring Pro helps. It streamlines the process so you can focus on connecting with the right candidates and not managing the noise. Hire right the first time. Post your first job and get $100 off towards your job post at linkedin.com/Eisen. That's linkedin.com
Eisen. Terms and conditions apply. Okay.
You know, guys, we...
What were you doing on that night that you're...
he can't... Well,
I mean...
The big night of the Yankees World Series.
Now that I think
about
it, it doesn't matter. But we've got a birthday in the house today.
Oh, yes. What do you have? Whose is it?
Jason Feller.
Hey!
Feller's birthday.
Hey!
Is he here? Why are you doing here on your birthday? When you don't have to be here.
Or you got to work for...
He's part of NCW. Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Oh, you're tapping out.
No, I'm here. We got work to do.
Okay. Happy birthday.
Hey.
How old are you?
41.
41. The baby of the Rich Eisen Show, unless you're younger.
Hey, he got me by like 2 years, I think.
Do you know I could check the records?
But then this bit would be over.
I don't want to blow up the bit.
We don't want to.
I'm still in my 40s.
That's true.
You're mid-40s, right? What are you, 45?
45, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, great.
You do?
Wait a second. Now, Del Tuvo said earlier he thought he looked great, and you said that was a lie.
You do
and
look great,
and
Mike.
And you just come out and just say, I look great.
I'm the same age as I was 40 years ago.
I'm just saying.
Can I say that? I don't age.
I'm the same age.
Well, I literally still feel like I'm.
So you like were. 19. So you felt 60 when you were 20?
No.
He felt. No, no, he feels 20 when he's 60.
This is typical Del Tufo. How do we go from wishing Feller a happy birthday to talking about Del Tufo again?
Narcissist. That's how.
How's it?
Yes. I am not a narcissist.
This isn't even about you. It's about Feller.
We just alienated Feller on his birthday. He just walked away.
Come over here, Jay.
Feller loves me.
What does somebody give an audio expert / mold remediator for a birthday?
Oh, that's a great question.
You know what I mean?
Great question.
What do you give somebody who's just a titan who straddles the worlds of audio and mold?
Well, I know when he was a kid, he used to like Tonka trucks and stuff. So maybe we get him that or a
Tonka
tank
trucks. But how do you know what he liked as a kid?
We talk a lot.
Yeah, come on.
We have more than surface level conversations.
TJ's actually Felly's godfather.
Wait a minute.
Another one.
Godfather to everybody.
Oh, well, me and his uncle are like this now, and I think his uncle may have approved of that. So, yeah.
TJ's a good godfather.
I'm one of the best at that.
Are you really?
It goes me, then Don Vito, then Michael. I think.
Oh, so at a celebration, you're in your office taking requests.
Michael kills the father of his.
Hey!
Sorry,
spoiler alert. There's some people who don't know what's going on. I know these movies have been out since you were 20.
Good job.
Wow. Oh.
See
what? Oh, that would make him
actually. No, it's actually been out since he was 10.
Yeah.
10.
Oh my God.
I know, Mike. But you look great.
You look great, Mike.
You look great. I've never seen somebody look so youthful hopping from bandwagon to bandwagon like you do, man.
Go Dodgers.
Never.
Where's O'Shea? I need my... See, I get abused without O'Shea here.
Hey, you know what we are tomorrow for the first time ever? I'll say it again tomorrow. Masters Counter Programming.
Woo!
That's never happened in the history of the Rich Eisen Show. We're on ESPN2 tomorrow.
Let's go.
So, it's a new tradition unlike any other.
I love it. I love it.
Okay, and it starts tomorrow.
Let's go.
Yeah, Mold School, everybody. Happy birthday to the star of Mold School.
I was at this club in Pittsburgh.
Thanks for listening to the Rich Eisen Show podcast. You can watch and listen to the Rich Eisen Show live weekdays from noon to 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio, Disney Plus, and on the ESPN app. The Rich Eisen Show, the podcast.